I'd like to share some brief reflections on the Derech HaLimud, the approach to Talmud study, Gemara study, of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And I'm entitling this Lamdos and Real Life. I remember I was a young student, and it could be, in all honesty, infuriating, certainly confusing, but often frustrating as well. I'd be sitting in Rav Lichtenstein's shir. He was a master of Gemara, of Shas, of Poskim, of Lamdos, a titan of a Talmud Chacham. When he would give his shiurim, and whatever the topic might be, and whatever the Lamdos that was relevant, whatever the set of analytic issues that were appropriate for that particular topic that we were studying, Rav Lichtenstein would inevitably pose two possibilities. He would pose two possibilities even when one of those two sides seemed somewhat implausible. But that was his style. He wasn't much interested in proving one side or the other. Even when he brought evidence to one side, it sort of felt like he was quoting some Ashkenazic Rishon or Zaruah or someone in favor of one side of his chakira, of the question at hand, but it didn't feel like it was meant to sort of close the question, to clinch the issue. Much the opposite. It was just to fill out the range of possibilities. I remember as well, he spent a tremendous amount of time in this, spilled over into the other shiurim in the yeshiva as well, on Hava Aminot. Why did the Gemara originally think to say something? It's not even the maskana, it's not even the conclusion of the Gemara, and yet he would spend an inordinate amount of time on the Hava Amina of the Gemara, on the Hava Amina of a Rishoni event. It just seemed very strange, in fact, to the point that I remember one time that one of my friends spent some time in another yeshiva, and one of the prominent Rashi yeshiva of that particular Torah institution, literally, while my friend was visiting, took the opportunity to shir one Friday morning, bash, literally, speak out against all these rebbeim in my yeshiva at Gush, who spent so much time studying and analyzing Hava Aminos. He said, the Gemara rejects the Hava Amina for a reason. Why spend so much time on Hava Amina when you can spend more time understanding the Gemara's conclusion or its maskana? And you know, although I was obviously horrified that the Rebbe chose in his own shir yomi, in his own regular daily shir, to call out the Derech HaLimud at another yeshiva, which I found to be incredibly inappropriate, and yet at the same time, there was something that resonated with me. Why were we spending so much time exploring every possibility, even one that was entirely rejected as a matter of practical halakha? Given all the brilliance and all the lamdos of Rav Lichtenstein, it seemed very strange and really quite hard to understand. But there's something else as well, because if you compare Rav Lichtenstein to his own Rebbeim and their Derech HaLimud, you'll find something quite different. Rav Soloveitchik, if you take a look at the notes from his Shir Yomi, at his published Shiurim, at the Shiurim of Zecher Abba Marizal, and the other works, Lamdisha works, that were produced directly by the Rav or published by his students, that wasn't the Rav's way. The Rav, first of all, wouldn't necessarily formulate explicitly a chakira on every sugya that he read. Never mind that his entire Derech HaLimud was focused, at least in the Shir Yomi, much more on sort of going through Gemara, Rashi, Tosos, Rambam, etc., straight through the Masechet. If there's interest, you can take a look at Rav Krumbein's excellent article published in a Torah journal called Nitu'im. There's also, I think, a very valuable article that was written in the most recent tradition that addresses the issue of Rav Lichtenstein's Derech HaLimud. Rav Dani Wolf from Gush wrote about that as well, and comparing also to some degree with the Rav as well. But clearly this was not the Rav's Derech HaLimud. He wasn't interested in the whole range of possibilities. He didn't even necessarily raise two possibilities or a chakira. Moreover, if the Rav wanted to clinch an argument, he would cite a Rishon in favor of a position, and that would be it. I remember hearing stories of people who are in the Rav's shir, and they would, and some of these are written up as well, and someone would come into shir and quote a Ritva or a Ran, Rishonim, that the Rav did not always use in his shir. And they would cite it as a proof against a theory of the Rav within Tosos. So, you know, I felt like if it's in Rav Lichtenstein's shir, he would say, okay, there's another shita out there, there's another perspective that's floating around, but the Rav would apparently break his head over this Ritva, or this Ran, or whatever the source, the Tosos, the Rash, whatever the source might have been. A very different kind of approach, certainly the focus on Hava Aminot, and the ever extending range of possibilities certainly was not there as well. Also, in terms of just sheer the breadth of the canon, I think is related to this as well. Rav Lichtenstein significantly broadened the Rav's canon. I mentioned that Rav would focus certainly his Shir Yom and even beyond on a relatively limited set of Rishonim, much like his father and grandfather before him. And Rav Lichtenstein, it's been argued under the influence of Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, expanded that canon in particular along the lines of the axis of the Ashkenazic Rishonim, the Or Zeruah, the Rav Yah, the Ravan, all these classic Rishonim that Rav Lichtenstein would cite. Talmud Rabbi Nutam was a part of our Limud and so on. Well, we learned Masechet Bava Kama. There's a Rabbi Blau from Brooklyn who published that, and so on and so forth. And so Rav Lichtenstein, by constantly expanding the canon of sources that were available, he was more apt, that was consistent with his attempt to widen the range of possibilities. And yet, with all of that, it's bewildering. And again, it's bewildering on two levels. It's strange because it felt unusual that there was such a commitment to this expanding the range of possibilities, even when it seemed possible to clinch another side of the argument. And it's unusual because this is a clear and very sharp departure from Rav Lichtenstein's own mentors, his Rebbeim, the Rav in particular, in terms of Derech HaLimud, and his other Rebbeim, I think Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Huttner, I think were much the same as the Rav in this regard from everything that I can tell. And so it's difficult to see what exactly it was that Rav Lichtenstein was driving at in this shift. But later on, I thought about it further, and I realized that perhaps there was another explanation or a way to understand what it was that Rav Lichtenstein was trying to do. I want to frame that by posing one of the basic problems that there are many who ask against the Brisker Derech, and this has become a real, very live, heated issue, a very important issue in yeshivot in Eretz Yisrael, in yeshivot Hesder in particular. And this is sort of the sense of the detachment between Brisker Lungus on the one hand and what's called quote-unquote real life on the other. If you take a look at one of Rav Shagar's classic works, in which he analyzes contemporary Darchei HaLimud, he essentially posits that Brisker Lamdos and modern, more meaning-oriented Darchei HaLimud that are becoming prominent in certain yeshivot around Otniel and other yeshivot has there with that Israeli kind of flavor. What we're finding, says Rav Shagar, is essentially a fundamental difference of opinion as to the relationship between lamdas on the one hand and everyday living on the other. That the Brisker approach traditionally, historically, was much more oriented toward a detached approach where Torah and lived everyday life were intentionally distanced from one another, in this sense of Torah being a different language, Torah being an alternative way to look at the world, and that's really what the Brisker was trying to do, and that's why the Brisker did not like to ask the question why, only wanted to ask the question what, much like the halachic scientist or mathematician, as it were, defining terms, understanding the austere divine will in all its depth and all its profundity, and yet at the same time not trying to understand the why or the element of meaning that it bears, that it carries for me. On the other hand, argued Rav Shagar, more modern methods and Israelis are looking for something very different, having been reconnected with their land in light of the influence of the thought of Rav Kook. The sense of everyday living is a sanctified one, and the notion that Lundos should be somehow separated from that feels very exilic and does not accord with an Israeli mindset, one that sees everyday life as infused inherently with Kedusha, the notion that Lamdos should somehow be detached from that everyday life seems foreign to the young Israeli, and therefore Rav Shigar sought a different path. And so this is a real question for the Brisker: what is the relationship with real life? And there have been many solutions. There are some, because of this critique, have pushed toward learning Halacha L'Masa. Take a look at Rav Ovadia's classic introduction to Yabia Omer, in which he argues exactly this. He says you have all these Bnei Yeshiva and these Litvisha places where we're learning Zvachim and Menachos and Lundus from today till tomorrow. B'delcha Shabbos, they don't know. Echos Brachos, they can't begin to speak about. And so the importance of learning Halacha L'Masa. There are others, as I mentioned, the case of Rav Shigar, push toward aspects of personal meaning. There are more extreme forms of this, sort of postmodern approaches that are intertwined with Chassidut and Kabbalah and so on and so forth. If we stick a stay on Otniel's, Rav Yaakov, formerly Gnak, now in the game, I think is a good example of this, someone who combines real serious Litvisha learning together with some of those other aspects, with the academic piece, with the meaning pieces, with the philosophical dimension, really interweaving this in an interdisciplinary way. Anyone who's interested, you can take a look in Torah Mada journal. I'm not sure offhand which journal, but Rabbi Rav Nagin has an excellent article there in which he just simply touches on and outlines some of the core approaches that he adopts in his yeshiva and his shiurim, and you can take a look there as well. So you have different approaches to dealing with this, and the general understanding, I think if you would poll most people, they would say that Rav Lachamsin, and I think correctly they would say, that he stood against this, that he believed that studying Halacha L'Masa was not the correct, approach, certainly as a replacement of Brisker Lundus. He was steeped in a very different tradition. He felt very strongly that Brisker Lundus brings something in terms of the elevating the stature of Torah, that's not merely a handmaiden into practical activity, but that it is it's a code of Jewish law, that it involves ideas and principles that supersede practical application. And so just to transform Lundus into Halacha L'Masa would be untrue to the Brisker tradition and would be the wrong approach. Similarly, with regard to personal meaning, Rav Lachamsin was clearly very critical of those who sought to turn Lamdus into a handmaiden for something that's about me. The life of Torah, mitzvot, is a life of commandedness. It's a life that is first and foremost about not rights, but responsibilities. It cannot be about me. It needs to be about my relationship with God. It needs to be about my relationship with the community. And if I'm focused on what the Torah says to me, that can reflect and can reinforce a self-centered kind of religiosity that essentially means that I'm only going to engage in something if I feel connected to it, if I feel a sense of what's commonly called in Israel, hitchabrut, right? And as opposed to being minutak, to feel connected, to feel mechubar, Rav Amital, the Korash Yeshiva Zecher Tzadok Racha, the Korash Yeshiva Rav Lichtenstein, pushed back against this, being hitchabrut lehitchayavut. He addressed the topic with that title, between in a classic essay, between a sense of connection and a sense of obligation, of responsibility. So the notion of taking Lundus and turning it into something that's really directed toward personal meaning, something that was certainly very far from being Rav Lichtenstein's cup of tea, and it would be right to say that he rejected both those solutions, quote-unquote, to the problem, the question of the relationship between Brisker Lundus on the one hand, and everyday life on the other. And so, at first glance, Rav Lichtenstein went with the classic Brisker approach and said, really, they don't have to have any connection. And yet, I think that beneath this surface, there's something else going on here as well. That to some degree, that might be correct, but in another respect, I think that it was precisely Rav Lichtenstein's decision to approach Lamdos in a way that stressed complexity, in a way that stressed the multiplicity of options available, that expanded the canon, that considered even the rejected suggestions of the Gemara, of the Midrashei Halacha, etc. I think it was precisely that expansivity and complexity where he would seek to lay out the range of possibilities, that was an approach to Lundus that he developed, and that was his, in many ways his alone, that was rooted in many respects in the core tenets of the Bris HaDerech, but one that he honed, one that he systematized in the sense of generating or creating a structure, a rubric that could be taught with relative ease to students who were entering into the yeshiva. It was much more clearly structured. The Rav's shir style struck many who were there as very intuitive, whereas Rav Lichtenstein really created an organizing structure that could be much more clearly communicated. But more than that, I think what was going on is that for him, the complexity of Lamdus mirrored the complexity of everyday life and of other areas of his thought as well. So in other words, we know that, and it's been noted over the last number of weeks since Rav Lichtenstein passed, and since he was Niftar, that this is something that he always sought to do. Instead of seeking to hold by just one side of a philosophical question or issues of different values that come into conflict, Rav Lichtenstein would always insist that we have to hold both and we have to push ourselves to do both better and to properly strike the balance among them. So, for example, Rav Lichtenstein's classic article on Yeshivot Hasder, on the balance between Torah learning and serving in the army. And he argues for the primacy of both, and he says, how can we not have Torah? And how can we not serve Medina Yisrael? How can we not join together with our brethren in defending our country? How can we not engage in the supernal acts of Gemilut Chasadim that are associated with serving? Rav Lichtenstein says we have to have both. Now, what exactly is the right balance between them? Does that mean we should learn yeshiva for X number of years and we should go serve in the army for 3 years as well? That can be difficult. So has there originally, at least, or still until now, although now there are multiple tracks being created within Hesder in the world of the yeshiva Hesder, but originally there was an arrangement and the soldier would serve for less time because there are tensions. On the one hand, you have to study Torah, you have to study Torah well, and you have to study intensively. On the other hand, you have to serve in the army. On the third hand, you have to go off to university at some point and begin to work toward making a living. So when balancing all these competing tensions, instead of siding with one or the other and just sort of closing shop, Rav Lichtenstein stressed the importance of striking a balance between them and somehow properly aligning one's values and making practical, correct, the best, most balanced practical decision in terms of accommodating all those multiple values and so on and so forth in a whole range of areas. In so many places, Rav Lichtenstein sought to uphold both. And that was true in his personal life as well, in terms of his own model, and that's been discussed since his Ptira as well. And so what I think Rav Lichtenstein was doing is that there was a subtle educational message that he sought to convey, that just as everyday life is complex, and we require not to be rejecting one possibility in favor of another, but rather seeking to balance both in one hand, and even if practically we have to reject one, the very value itself is important. The hava amina, as it were, of the activity or the value that I'm not involved in right now might have manifestation elsewhere in life, or at minimum, it's important for me to hold on to that as well. So Rav Lichtenstein was suggesting, I think, that what's true for everyday life, what's true for our value system, Jewish philosophy, is true in Lamdus as well. That in Lamdus it's possible for there to be multiple views that have legitimacy, or at least have a foundation as part of the Elu. The Elu is part of the larger reading of the map of the Sugya. In fact, one of Rav Lichtenstein's students published a whole series of articles. It was a very creative fusion of books, ultimately. So a very creative fusion between the thought or the alumnus of Rav Lichtenstein on the one hand and the approach of all people of Rav Breuer with regard to Tanakh on the other. It's a very creative notion. And we know that Rav Breuer developed this notion of shtei bechinot, that very often as a way of dealing with some of the academic challenges to the authorship of Torah Shebichtav, Rav Breuer developed the notion that very often the Torah describes the same event from shtei bechinot, and that God himself is manifest to us in this world in multiple dimensions, and so very often it's through those two dimensions that the Torah will tell us the same thing. So it's not multiple authors, it's just that the same author, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reveals himself to us through different manifestations. Through those different manifestations, he will sometimes write in his Torah. He will convey the same narrative in different ways in order to reflect the multiplicity of God's manifestations, at least as we see him, refracted in our lowly world. And so the student developed a Derech HaLimud, essentially, where he applied Rav Breuer's Lamdos to Rav Lichtenstein's Lamdos and published a series of Sorim about Shtei Bechinot in Lamdos. And he took a whole range of different sugyot that had been discussed very often in Yeshiva, and he developed the notion that in both there were multiple Bechinot. Now, in all honesty, when I read that those Sfarim and I saw them applied to certain sugyot, I did not always find the Lamdos to be convincing. I think it's fair to say that Rav Lichtenstein probably would not necessarily have felt that it was convincing as well, but I think in a deeper sense, it does capture some of the spirit of what Rav Aaron was really driving at. That there's really this notion that when we look at a sugya, so even if we don't say that both tzadim, that both sides of the chakir must always be right in all circumstances, but that at minimum there can be a multiplicity of options, and that can be legitimate. So I think in some way Rav Lichtenstein was trying to do is not to say that Torah directly addresses real life, quote-unquote, or everyday life more precisely, in the sense that Gemara learning should be about learning halacha l'maaseh, or in the sense that Gemara learning should be about deriving philosophical values, that is the sole value of learning Gemara, or the primary value, and certainly not about first and foremost drawing personal meaning, even if that is legitimate at a later stage of the process of lamdos. But what I think Rav Lichtenstein did do is not to completely reject that offhand the relationship between learning on one hand and everyday life on the other. That Rav Lichtenstein and his style of learning, in which he broke away in certain ways, very meaningfully and very significantly from the Rav and others, even as he held on clearly to the core of the Brisker approach. But I think that independence came from his commitment to this idea. And so in that sense, I think Rav Lichtenstein was really trying to teach us through the complexity of Lamdos about the complexity of everyday life.